Hi, I'm Bill Arnold. Thank you for listening to this podcast of Real Recovery. There are many more podcasts available at myfaithradio.com. Your support makes this possible. Thank you. Welcome to Real Recovery. Thank you for joining us tonight. Bill Arnold on this side of the studio and just across the way, George B. Fraser. Hello, George.
Billy, how are you?
I'm really good. I'm glad to be here with you tonight. And Ryan's at the board, so we're looking for a great show. We've got Andy Partington, who's written a book called Hope and Addiction. And let me just read something from his book, if I may, George. In the age of addiction, the heart of our calling is the call to proclaim the good news that through Jesus Christ, we can have a living relationship with the God, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit who transforms us from the inside out.
I love that.
That's all we need to talk about tonight. Then we're done.
So what you been doing lately?
Well, we should probably talk a little bit more and then bring Andy on. But definitely, I'm looking forward to hearing his story. It's pretty interesting. He went into rehab at a very young age, and we'll find out what he means by that when we bring him on.
Johnny Carson, how young was he? Yeah, nobody gets that anymore.
That's right.
What step did you want to talk about? What step did you prepare tonight?
Well, you know, as always, we talk about a step on Real Recovery because we understand the steps to be almost like calisthenics. They help keep you in shape, and they're all biblically based, and there's nothing to fear about the steps. Even if you've never been involved in an addiction like drugs or alcohol, by the very nature of you once living in a sinful lifestyle prior to becoming born again, you now are living in a different life, and you are a changed person, and you need to live differently, George.
You know, that was so well said. And really what they are is an opportunity to take what you read in the Bible, what you hear in church, and walk it out. I know for me that's always a hard problem. And Bill, you told me one time when you speak, you always want to make sure that the audience has something to take home in a brown paper bag.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, you know, chocolate chip cookies would be nice, but you mean have something they can use.
I want something that they're going to remember, something that they can retrieve and use and apply. Otherwise, why talk?
Yeah.
Yeah. So here we are with a talk show, George. So
sounds like a
talking.
Shampoo. Do you rinse, lather, and repeat?
Exactly.
But I think one of the things that we can do is we hear something and go, gosh, that's so good. And then you forget it driving home from church or your Bible study or whatever. What I wanted to talk to everyone about tonight is step one, and we admit we're powerless over drugs and alcohol and our life's unmanageable. We do a lot of stories on this show, God's story and people, about redemption, sanctification, forgiveness, and ultimately glorification. And what we really get focused on sometimes is the wonder of the stories and the dramatic turnaround. Let's not lose sight of what the whole show's about, and that's mm-hmm. God.
George, when you are in recovery rooms, and I know you've been going to recovery rooms for many, many years, 38 plus, right around there?
Well, it's 39, but who'd quibble on that? That would be ego, edging God out. And, of course, you know, I'm a bigger man than that.
Good, okay.
You know, a while ago, maybe at 37 years, I wasn't, but, you know, I've gotten over it. Now I have a resentment, but go ahead.
That's okay. Now I've forgotten the question I was going to ask after your little monologue.
You were going to ask me at 38 years.
Oh, yeah. Talk about the repetitiveness of going over the steps because, you know, we do a step every week and I just want everyone to know why it's not repetitive. It's important to do it over and over and over.
Yes, it's about walking out your faith and it's not a course where you take it, check the box and you're good to go. I always hear from people that they have to work their recovery program. And a good friend of mine, Jimmy T. from Myrtle Beach, says, no, that's wrong. You have to live it.
Mm.
And I think we can compartmentalize our lives like, you know, Sunday we're in church. I'm always going to be there and God willing and Bible study. And I did my God stuff for the week and now I can go back and be George. One of the gifts, if you have an addiction, is you're dying spiritually and ultimately physically, and you have a gift that you have to every day pick up your cross and deny yourself. And at first, that seems like such a burden, but it really isn't when you know the grace, mercy, and peace that you have when you're walking with Jesus. But it's real hard to believe that that's going to be better than doing coke or smoking pot or meth. until you get there. And it takes about a year before the color comes on in the movie of The Wizard of Oz.
Mm-hmm.
That's the same way it is in your recovery. God transforms your heart. So why do you keep doing it? I play the same golf course pretty much every day. They move the pins around and the weather's different. Your life changes every day.
Mm-hmm.
New things happen. You meet new people, new circumstances. But God's principles, which are epitomized in the 12 steps, is the way we walk out our faith. It's a path to do. Mm-hmm. And the first three steps, of course, Bill, is I can't do it. He can do it. I'm going to let him do it. So your addiction is really an outward manifestation of a defective heart condition, really called you want to be your own God, call your own shots. And we were made with God to have a relationship with him. So there's going to be a hole in your heart, in your gut, that it's never going to be good enough. And you can try to get new stuff and get a new job and new people in your life and money and new drugs. And it's never good enough because it's not supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
You're always going to long for God. And when you get that, when you get in recovery, and we believe all Christians should be in recovery because they are in recovery because they're different than when Christ saved them. You walk it out, and you have problems, and you want to work towards holiness, sanctification. One of the first questions you ever asked me was, why don't you ever talk about holiness? And I said, I don't know. And I think for me and a lot of other people at that time, Billy, I had been sober a long time. I thought I was good to go. And we're either moving on, pressing towards the goal, as Paul wrote in Philippians, of holiness with Christ, or we're going backwards. So if you've been sober a long time, if you've gotten over your gambling addiction, good for you. God did it for you. You got to walk along with it and be obedient and do your part and yield to his sovereignness. Is that a word?
I believe it is.
It is now. Okay. Mm-hmm. That's the word of the week right there with linoleum. Anyway, so what we're going to talk about is bending the knee and doing what God wants you to do. And for a lot of us, we do that by working the steps.
Yeah. Where the world pulls away, and often with good reason, our Heavenly Father draws us close. And you might be wondering, how do you access this? And it's very simple. You follow Christ's call on your life. You give him your life. You surrender your addictions, your anxieties, your fears. Addiction is not a life sentence. You can give it to Christ and walk in freedom, because that's what the gift of salvation is, to free you from the enslavement to sin. And just like you say, George, in step one, well, we are powerless over alcohol or drugs, and we can also just say powerless over sin, that our lives are unmanageable.
It's not a life sentence, but it can be a death sentence.
I know. So we've got Dr. Andy Partington coming up on the show. We're going to take a little break. You're listening to Real Recovery with Bill and George. If you're new to the program, you can learn more about us at myfaithradio.com. I hope you do, and I hope you can check out some of the other podcasts there. We're going to take a short break and be right back with Andy. Welcome back to Real Recovery. So glad you're with us today. Our special guest, Andy Partington, is with us. He's written a book, again, called Hope in Addiction, Understanding and Helping Those Caught in Its Grip. George, I'm looking forward. We don't get authors very often, but this is going
to
be great.
I always want to learn things to help our recovery.
Yeah, so true. Andy, welcome to our show.
It's a pleasure to be with you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Okay, now your book is interesting, and I love in chapter one, or in the introduction, you talk about being raised in rehab. You did your first night in rehab at age 5, and then you didn't leave until you're 18, so you have some explaining to do.
Absolutely, yeah. My parents were called into that ministry when I was a kid. My dad had worked in commerce, and they ran into some real challenges in their marriage, and made a major kind of pivot in terms of work. And so my dad was running a rehab, and back then in the UK, I guess in the US too, it wasn't uncommon for families to move on site into the rehab, the families of staff, just to create a really strong sense of community, a really strong sense of family for the guys on the program. So yeah, that was me, and it was wonderful. If I'm being completely honest, it was a wonderful way to grow up.
What did you like about it?
Yeah, it's interesting, you know. I'll tell you what I liked about it as a kid, and then I'll tell you what I like about it looking back. So, as a kid, I was surrounded by great guys who I could play pool with. I could kick a football around with. When it was my school holidays, I'd go out and work on the estate with the guys. So the rehab was in a place called Yeldall Manor, a beautiful mock Tudor mansion house in the southeast of England. So big estate, massive building. So I would go out and I'd work with the guys every evening. We would sit around tables in the main dining room and eat together. I just enjoyed being part of that tribe. You know, I loved it. Looking back, what did I love about it? I saw up close at such a young age just the power of Christian community as a place of healing, place of transformation, a place for a second chance and a third chance and a fourth chance. It was amazing. I saw the recovery was a process, you know. It was a blessing.
I really love that description, Andy. And I had this thought, I don't know, years and years ago, because George and I have both do and have done a lot of work with men in recovery. And I always thought at facilities like the one that your parents were a part of and that you grew up in, it was a year-long program. Does that sound about right?
Yeah, a bit less than that, but yeah, exactly. Long, long shift.
Yeah. And I always thought how people want to become missionaries and they want to go to Peru for a year. What if they went and lived in a rehab environment and they were just healthy, well-balanced Christians that had good habits and good disciplines and loved the Lord, and they created almost a role model of how to do life differently?
And that's exactly what it was. You know, it was being family together.
Yeah.
And of course, we live in different times. You know, I don't know whether you should move with your young kids into a rehab, but you know, the today, you know, but we had a great experience, no issues at all. And certainly, you know, those grandparent figures, the parent figures that we need in our lives to help us to grow and to help us to face and walk through the tough times. What better gift to someone who's struggling and is trying to turn things around?
I think one of the questions I'd love to ask, and it's kind of the big question of the day, is how can we find freedom from addiction?
The million dollar question, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah. Get out your checkbook.
Gosh. I mean, you know, I talk about in the book, and it's a helpful kind of start point, I guess. I talk about Batman and Spider-Man. And the way in which they do what they do, because both Batman and Spider-Man do a heroic thing and what can feel like an impossible thing. And I think when we're talking about recovery, we need to recognize the scale of the challenge. You know, we have a word for this that isn't problem. It isn't difficulty. It's addiction, because we are talking about something different. And when you look at Batman and Spider-Man, what Batman does what Batman does because he's got the tools for the job. He's got the Batmobile, the Batarang, and he's got Robin by his side. He's not alone in the battle. And I think, you know, a central plank for any recovery is tools, strategies, and community, relationships. And that I think as Christians is vital. We don't forget that. We don't forget that this is street fighting. You know, this is really practical, a lot of it. But when you look at Spider-Man, how did Spider-Man do what Spider-Man did? Well, Spider-Man was bitten by the toxic spider. And so the internal change happened within him. And as a result of that, he walked forward a different being. And so, you know, we've got the Batman stuff, but actually, you know, you'll know, and I know the X factor in any recovery when someone encounters Christ and has that transformational experience with him, fullness of the Spirit, then you've got an inside out driver for this transformation. And I really believe it's those two things together. You know, it's the Batman stuff, the tools, the tactics. The relationships are so crucial. But yeah, that inner change, that transformation that only Christ can bring is vital.
So when you have worked in addiction, you've been in London, Latin America, West Africa villages. You have traveled and seen so many different environments and cultures. Is there something that you see in common amongst all of those cultures around the world?
One of the keys is you just see good people. You know, you just see good people. And what was the biggest takeaway for me, I think, growing up in rehab? Actually, it was that I got to know a bunch of guys in recovery, early recovery. Yeah, but they were in recovery. And I saw guys who were kind, who were just stacked full of potential, intelligent, capable people. I came to love and were like big brother figures and uncle figures to me. And that's the truth. Wherever you go in the world, that's what you run into when you run into people in early recovery. And I think as a kid, I would then hear the stories of where the addiction had taken people and the challenges it had thrown in and the pain that they caused and the heartache that could very easily consume them. And that's the same wherever you go. You look in the eyes of everyone who's on this journey and fighting this fight, and you just see a good brother, you know, a good sister. Now, you know, really practically, you see a change of substances, you see a change of kind of the journey through addiction changes, you know, the descent can be more rapid or slower, depending on all the factors around you. But at the end of the day, it's just good people, you know, just found themselves far from God oftentimes and far from the best that God had for them. And really, everyone saying, you know what, my addiction began as a solution to a set of problems. You know, when I think back, really what my addictive behavior was doing for me, it was helping me deal with stuff. And then, of course, it evolved and it became the problem. But the idea, I love this idea of addiction as being like a state of hibernation, you know, like an animal will hibernate in the winter. Because it speaks to us as addiction as being a sort of response to a hostile habitat, to a difficult environment. And again, it doesn't matter where you go. That's really what's going on underneath the surface for those who can find themselves in the grip of addiction.
Andy Partington is our guest on Real Recovery tonight. And George, you might say that for you, you enjoyed the fun side of drug use.
Totally.
Yeah, you weren't trying to mask too many problems. Obviously, you had some as a kid, but you were more drawn into the party feature of using drugs and alcohol.
Totally. Yeah. But I think, you know, for each person, it's different. Basically, what you do when you use a chemical is you change how you feel. And it works every time. And I think the reason we have rehab centers, people really don't want to quit, otherwise they would. And the problem is you don't want to give up the good stuff, but if it gets bad enough, then you have consequences. And so you're either going to lose something you're not willing to lose or not getting something that you think you need to be happy. And that's when you do it.
I'd like to ask both you and George, I'd love to have you both answer this question. And that is, what do you think leaves us so vulnerable to addiction today? Andy, you go first.
Yeah, I think because, and again, just to kick on from what George was saying, yeah, I think, you know, everyone I know who's dealt with addiction, it did a bunch of great things, and it was tremendously positive. It really was a positive in their lives for a time. But yeah, what's kind of peel back the layers and what's going on? And yeah, one of the things I sort of tried to do in the book is talk about why are we seeing so much addiction today, and what are the drivers of that? And of course, access is a huge part of it. You know, if you flood a market with a substance like, yeah, oxycodone, you're going to have people get addicted. If you fill your pockets with machines that give you instant access to porn or to gambling or whatever, you're going to see a rise in addiction. But I think there are social drivers behind it as well. And I talk about hopelessness, a sense of emptiness, adverse childhood experiences, and just a generic sense of disconnection and loneliness that many people feel. And I think there's this, we see a seedbed for addiction in our times that means we're really ripe to then respond to these to these to our access to all of these substances and behaviors that will addict us if we let them.
I totally agree with that. And I think most of the guys I've worked with, including myself, the first time, you know, you ask somebody, you remember the first time you got high or drunk? Oh, absolutely you do, because it's the first time you felt okay.
Mm.
And, you know, that's very reinforcing. And I think today the speed of play in life, you know, you talk about people, how could you be addicted? Okay, tell me about your iPhone. Yeah. I think everybody is addicted to their iPhone. And for me, you know, the test is when I can't find it, I totally panic. I know a lot of people that have their laptop on all day, you know, referring to it. And, you know, there's positive things that helps you work, keeps you in. But the need to have the constant shot of dopamine, you know, whether it's being on a social media or doing cocaine or whatever, it's constant. And then you need something to help you check out.
Yeah.
Andy. It's this interaction between your supply and demand, but we've got these brains that are just perfectly designed to learn what is going to give us the quick and the powerful and the consistent hit that we need, you know, and once we, I think we all feel, like you say, with our cell phones, you know, how quickly we become habituated into scrolling and checking and looking at those things. It's unbelievable.
You write in your book, Andy, that I often wonder whether my smartphone serves me or I serve it.
Yeah.
And it's really true. Kids are looking at screens 9 hours a day.
And what the great thing about this is this gives us all a touch point to understand something of what addiction looks like, right?
Yes, indeed.
Because we're talking about an issue that's such a feature of the age we live in. It's such a common experience. And yet I think within our churches, it still sits very much on the sidelines. It's a side hustle. And, you know, when you take the cell phone and you wave it around and you see the look in people's eyes, you think, yeah, we all know something here now of what addiction looks like. You couldn't say that 10 years ago.
Totally.
Yeah, that's so true.
I was on the other night and a thing came up. The real reason why the TV show Gilligan's Island got canceled. Well, 40 minutes later, I still didn't have the answer, but I needed to know it, you know? And
you found out, didn't you?
I didn't. Oh. It just kind of ended. And
you must have been losing a lot of sleep, aren't you?
I've been perseverating on it for 2 weeks, yeah.
That sounds about you. Right, George. Well, Andy, so we're going to take a break here in just a minute, but when we come alongside people struggling in addiction, and we want desperately to help them get out from underneath it and to start a new path. For many, many people, we realize either they're going to die or they're going to get sober.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Knife-edge stuff, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Knife-edge stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah, we're going to take a little break. We'll come back lots more with Andy Partington. He's written a book called Hope in Addiction, Understanding and Helping Those Caught in Its Grip. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. George and I have got Andy Partington is our guest tonight. He's written a book called Hope in Addiction, Understanding and Healing Those Caught in Its Grip. Andy, let's talk about recovery and how do we understand recovery that it can be successful and lasting? And what advice would you have, and I'm saying this to you too, George, about someone that you love and care about who's struggling with sobriety? Andy, you first.
Yeah. You know, I think we've got to acknowledge and everyone knows this, it's a hard path. It's a narrow path. It's I think one of the most helpful phrases we can grip hold of, particularly when we're alongside someone who's in addiction, is this idea that no one can do it for you, but you can't do it alone. No one can do it for you, but you can't do it alone. And so as we come to recovery, I think that there's a couple of key elements that we need to look for, we need to stir up. One of them is that sense of community, that sense of relationship. And those need to be wisely handled so that they're productive. They're not damaging. But the relationships need to be in place. I think hope needs to be in place. And hope is both that desire for change and the belief that it's possible. The desire, we can help to stir that up. But at the end of the day, that's really hard as someone alongside someone in addiction to kind of make happen. But what we can do is be alongside to try to say, hey, look, here's a pathway. Here's how the way out might be possible for you. And I think there's a couple of elements to that journey out that we need to understand. The first one is that there's the actual hardwired relationship with the substance or the behavior that's got to be addressed. You know, this is hard to deal with because the brain gets onto these tram lines and it's just doing what it's doing. And so, you know, the way out of addiction, the way into recovery is very often going to require serious support, the right amount of time, some kind of safe space, some kind of protective environment, whether that's regular 12-step meetings, whether that's something residential, whatever it might be, there's going to be that working on the real, again, this street fighting against the actual direct relationship with whatever the habit might be. But underneath that, it's saying, okay, but what is the underlying driver? You know, let's try to make sense of why this thing got a grip in the first place. You know, what's the vulnerability? What's the pain that the addiction is kind of solving? What's the problem that the addiction is answering? And the route through is going to be different. You know, it's not simple. And I think as those who are alongside, there's got to be a real sense of recognizing what we can do and what we can't do to aid that recovery journey.
Well said. I don't think that anybody gets sober without God, whether they acknowledge that or not. And for me, my experience has been that a lot of people don't. I'm a big fan of the 12 steps. My interpretation there, God, as you understand him, is Jesus, because he is. By no other name are you saved. But something happens to where they're willing to look at it, usually consequences that they're not mm-hmm. willing to live with. And I think they have to be convicted by the Holy Spirit. Not only do they have a problem, but you talked about that there's hope. And I always try, Billy, with my guys to say, he who began a good work in you will be faithful to complete it. Mm. But you need to be around like-minded people. And I got off the phone today with a friend who's struggling. And I'm a Christian. I go to church. And I was a Christian before I got sober. But I think in the church community, we have a tendency to shoot our wounded in recovery. We're welcoming with open arms. That was my experience. And I think the recovery rooms look like the early church did. And I think what they also do with hope is find other people that have walked the journey that you have, that God has helped them through it, so they're not terminally unique and they're not that unusual. And you find people that you can have community with, right? The old saying is addiction is isolation and recovery is community. But I would say rather than the problem, Andy, the way I like to phrase it, go out of Ephesians 3 we put off the old and put on the new. And I like to say that guys need to find in their recovery, I know I did, what I was trying to get out of my using. Yeah. I like to get high. I like to socialize. I like stress reduction. I like celebration. I like the snappy patter of like a locker room in high school. And I missed all those when I would just quit using. And I think the reason people use is they need something or want something that they should have in their life. And I'd be real interested what you think of that.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, if you strip it back and you say, you know, the drivers are addiction, a sense of hopelessness, a sense of emptiness, adversity and stuff we're dealing with from early in life, a sense of disconnection. That community we're looking for has got to be delivering those things. You know, we've got to be finding the ideal of that fake that we were using. And all the more in those early days, right? Like it takes time for the benefits of recovery to start to roll out. And so in those early days, it's got to be immediate. It's got to be men in the trenches, women in the trenches with us. And that sense of tribe, you know, I think for many, they talk about the early days of addiction being the draw as much as the experience itself was the community, was the sense of fellowship, the sense of being in something together with a group of others. And so in those early days, especially, we need that. We need brothers in arms.
Andy Partington is our guest. Hope and Addiction is the name of his book, Understanding and Helping Those Caught in Its Grip. And Andy, you are quite the quotable writer. If I just can read a couple for George and the audience. Like the iris of the human eye, indeed, like any relationship, no two addictions are the same. And addiction is an intense, all-consuming, and ultimately toxic relationship. And this is one, George, I think you'll like. Addictive behaviors make life in a dark world tolerable until they don't.
Yep.
That's so true. So, Andy, let's talk about the role the church has in promoting recovery. How is the church doing in terms of coming alongside and helping people caught in an addiction?
Yeah, it's every church is different, you know, and I think, you know, one is wary
good,
of...
Good answer. Good answer.
One is wary of casting aspersions. And I feel, you know, I feel for churches because this is, you know, we all know when addiction's, you know, out of hand, it's hard and it's painful to get in into the middle of that. So, you know, part of me understands why people kind of step back. But the truth is addiction. And we've talked about smartphones. We've talked about, you know, we should talk about porn. We should talk about gambling. There's all this stuff that it's such a feature. We live in firmly, I believe, an age of addiction. And it's one of the hallmarks of our times. And so as the church, yeah, I think we need to put this right in the center of our thinking, and not to try and pull it away from the fellowships, not to try and pull it away from Celebrate Recovery or the rehabs, but to really sort of reach out and to really connect ourselves in with all of those. I think there's stuff we can do internally that actually doesn't necessarily look sort of addiction recovery specific, but actually will help us too, because I'm firmly convinced what we don't need when we're fighting addiction is a superficial spirituality, superficial relationships, formalities, social environments. You know, we're doing something serious, and I actually think in that there's a gift to the church as you engage with those in early recovery, as you come to understand what goes on in the 12-step fellowships. There's something we as the church at large have to learn from that. So I really see a sort of a really mutually beneficial relationship being just a kind of step across the room away from all of us. I know a lot of guys who haven't fought addiction, but are weary of superficiality spiritually and relationally in church, and they kind of look across and see what goes on in a 12-step fellowship, and they want some of that. That's what they want.
Yeah, the superficiality. I think we should lean into it, unpack it, and bless it right here. No, I think what you're saying is right. And we talk about on this show that all Christians are in recovery. Their behavior should be different. But I think a lot of times the best thing a church can do is let the recovery groups use your basement and give them a coffee machine. Because when you're fighting for your life, the good behavior and saying the right thing goes out the window. And there's a level of rigorous honesty that I have never found in church groups. And I think it would really help everything. But don't you think the early church kind of reflected the recovery groups?
This is it, right? Like, I don't think we'll ever, you know, the gift of desperation is so vital to that vulnerability and that reality. But that's what I long for us as the broader church to just get a grip of that, because I think it does. We're all fighting for our lives. You know, the enemy is after us all. And there's a gift that the recovery movement can be to the church that we're missing out on at the moment, and actually vice versa. You know, there's a lot of people who I think, given half an opportunity, will would love to sit around and have that level of honesty and reality that they see. They just need leading into it.
Well said.
Yeah, I like that. Thank you for that, Andy. Andy, what would you say to someone that says, I'm just fearful that my addiction is a life sentence?
I'd say take the next step. I'd say, none of this is a life sentence before God. You know, the power of his spirit, the all that was won on the cross, the enemy has been defeated. We can step into the victory in Christ. But the next step is into a 12-step meeting. It's into a therapy session. It's checking into rehab. It's talking to your pastor. It's something. You know, God's bigger than your addiction, and God's bigger than the pain that drives your addiction. God's bigger than the shame that came from the first relapse and the second and the third and the fifth and the, you know, God's bigger than all of those things.
Mm-hmm. So good. We're going to take a little break, but before we go, Andy, George and I are kind of simple guys, and we're sitting there wondering, how good is your James Bond impression? Let's hear it.
You want Sean Connery, don't you?
Well, of course I do. Of course I do, but I just want to hear you do it.
No, I can't do it, Bond. James Bond. No, you got the wrong guy. My son would do it for you, a treat.
Yeah, your son would say, my name is Bond, James Bond, right?
James Bond. Yeah. Oh,
there we go.
Yeah.
All right, we're talking.
I'm not sure that was that good, to be honest.
All right. Andy Partington is our guest. His book is Hope and Addiction, Understanding and Helping Those Caught in Its Grips. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Real Recovery. Our guest, Andy Partington, has written a book called Hope and Addiction, Understanding and Helping Those Caught in Its Grip. The recovery movement was onto something when they said that at the root of every addiction is an addiction to self. My will be done. And Andy, when you grew up in a recovery environment from ages 5 to 18, you saw a lot. And maybe the question I'd like you and George to talk about is, in recovery, what are you recovering from?
Yeah, I think there's these two levels, right? You're recovering from this toxic relationship we were talking about, mm-hmm. where you've become so enmeshed with this behavior, and it's changed the way your brain works, and it's just gripped hold of you. So that's a real challenge. But underneath that, I firmly believe it's recovering from the underlying drivers of the addiction. You know, it's working out, you know, what was it that created the fertile seedbed in my life for becoming addicted.
George?
I'd go to an English lady, Cindy Lauper. I just wanted to have fun, you know, and the community, what she say. And that's really good, but I think this is such a gift that my drinking's a symptom of my self-centeredness, selfishness, and egocentrism. Yeah. I want to be God in my life. And even though I've been sober a long time, when I sin, I'm choosing to do my will instead of God's because his isn't good enough for me.
I'll ask George you this question, and Andy, I'd love you to respond as well. Small groups at church, would they be more effective if they looked like AA groups? George?
Oh, totally.
Okay.
Be more interesting. We'd laugh more. I don't laugh a lot in church.
Really?
Yeah, they'd be amazing. We just got to work out how to unlock it. You know, if we could just get 60-70% of that into our small groups, I think we got to change the setting. You know, we've got to come off the couches and we've got to get onto plastic chairs. We've got to take up the carpet and we've got to get some lino flooring.
Linoleum.
We got to get maybe some cheaper coffee, you know, and I think so often the small group vibe is a social vibe. You know, it's social middle class kind of a thing. You know, we need to strip it back and say this is a working group. We're here to do business with one another and with the Lord. I think someone's got to crack that code.
You know, I haven't read your book because the first time I see it is across the studio, and I'm going to swipe it from Bill and read it. But one of the things that I need help with, well, I need help with a lot of things, but we'll narrow it down here. I'm involved with a lot of addicts as friends and clients, and God convicted me about 20 years ago, well into sobriety, that by no other name are you saved. And I didn't want to be that guy. And my heart breaks that there's a rooms full of people that have been sober 30, 40 years where God really did the work. And when they get their medallion, how did you do it, Steve? And I really don't think we do it. I think God does it for us, and how that breaks down is a mystery. But how can we communicate Jesus better to people where God, the unknown God, like Paul in Greece, has changed them, given them the desire to do it and the way to do it? 12 steps came from God, no question. And how do you communicate that in a loving, kind way? Because at the end of the day, at the judgment, a lot of my friends are going to go to hell.
That's not an easy question. That's not an easy question because, you know, at the end of the day, it's the spirit that convicts, right? It's the spirit that does that. And I think that, again, it's where whether you're relating to someone who's in recovery or not, or wherever they might be in life, it's so difficult because you long to see people encounter their Father, you know, receive the fullness of his embrace, you know, the prodigal, you know, and it's like, we know a lot of guys who've sort of turned to home and they've come into the house and they've got the ring on the finger and the robe over their shoulders and they're enjoying the fattened calf. But those prodigals have come back and they've not experienced that embrace of the Father, which we know is just the eternal thing of value, the actual embrace of the Father, not the benefits of being in the Father's household. I wish I could answer that. You know, I think we pray and we fast, you know, maybe we got to press in harder sometimes because there's things that only, you know, we know from the Gospels, you know, there's things that only come out with prayer and fasting. I was just talking to someone about that a couple of moments ago. And we model the grace and the Father heart of God to the best of our abilities. Yeah.
Andy, great answer. I would love for you to talk about your work with Novo Communities. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
So with Novo Communities, I was led the work of a rehab in the southeast of England, a place called Yeldon Manor. But prior to that, our family had lived and served in Bolivia, in a city called Santa Cruz down there. And I was pastoring the international church down there. But to work on my Spanish, I became involved with a home for street teenagers. So kids who'd grown up on the streets of the city and were in this residential home, being loved and cared for and educated, prepped for the future. I got involved and it stirred up all these resonances from my childhood of the power of Christian community as a place of healing and transformation. And where the spirit works like no other. And long story short, having arrived in the UK and begun working at Yeldon Manor, really felt God calling us back to Bolivia to set up a residential home for adults in addiction, but with the idea longer term, which is really the phase we're stepping into now, of saying, how can we empower God's people in developing nations to create transformational communities that offer healing, wholeness, hope to folks in addiction? Because there's so many people doing heartfelt work out there, but so often what they miss is just some of the tools, some of the additional tools, some of the know-how, some of the resources, some of the encouragement. I was just talking at the weekend. It was a men's conference here in Nicaragua, and talking to a guy who was weeping really because he was saying, "I don't know what else I can do." You know, guys are coming in to our rehab and they're leaving, and my heart breaks for them. And I think, is this my fault? You know, what should I do differently? And so, you know, as Novo, what our calling is to come alongside a guy like that and say, okay, how can we help you with program, with resources, with fellowship, in order that we see, you know, real places of healing established all over the developing world. So that's what we do in on Novo Communities. And then Novo Adventures is a partner to Novo Communities, and it's a motorcycle tourism business based in Bolivia that we use to generate income, or we aim to use to generate income for the ministry.
Tell us more about that. That's interesting. Do you just rent motorcycles to tourists, and they pay you, and then that's how you generate revenue for the ministry?
More or less, we do guided tours.
Okay.
So guys come to us from the US, from Canada, from UK, from wherever, and we'll do a guided tour, whether it's for a couple of people or a big group of people, and we show them. Bolivia is one of the most biodiverse nations on the face of the planet. So you've got high salt flats, the largest salt flats in the world, down to the kind of tropical jungles. You've got the highest capital city in the world. There's all sorts of, and it's a adventure motorcyclists paradise. It's spectacular. So yeah, it's the vision would be that the income from that business drives forward the work, particularly in Bolivia, of Novo Communities. So yeah, folks can check that out on novoadventures.com. And the website for Novo Communities is novocommunities.org.
The amount of suffering, when I hear about teenagers on the streets who have been living on the streets, I can hardly wrap my head around that, Andy, because it's just so horribly sad. George and I had pretty nice upbringings in a pretty comfortable community. And to think of being disassociated from family and relatives and living on the street, I don't know how they do it. And I don't know how you do this day after day, coming alongside and helping speak life and truth into these kids.
Yeah. It's such a challenge. You know, I was just texting earlier with a guy called Benigno who came through our program a number of years ago now, and just had everything against him. Grew up on the streets, just left home one day as a sort of 4 or 5 year old and got lost, and no one really came looking for him.
Wow.
And so grew up on the streets. Came to us with TB, came to us with, he's got severe learning disabilities. But by the grace of God, and not least through the love of a local fellowship down there in Bolivia, you know, Benigno's clean and sober, and he's enjoying life in a Christian community.
Wow.
So it is overwhelming, but the love of God and the power of the gospel is more overwhelming. That's the truth, and that's what you got to stay focused on. One of the
things you do really well, I want to encourage you. The beginning was Superman and Batman, and I noticed in your endorsements of your book, John Eldridge, and the book, I think it was Wild at Heart or Wild Heart, about everything we do worship is, to me, communicated at my level a lot better than John Piper's Pleasures of God, where he talks about Christian hedonism. And I think a lot of it is how you present it. John Piper is not wrong in that everything a Christian does should be an act of worship and should be better because of Jesus. And Eldridge talks about camping as worship and hiking and all that. And for me, golf, working out, yoga, the whole bit. And you communicate that well to people that have the wrong ideas of Christianity. And my broadcast partner, Bill, always talks about guys, tell me about God. And they tell him, and he goes, you know, that I wouldn't be able to worship that God either. Mm-hmm. Start reading the book of John. And you do that really well. So I want to encourage you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that. That's an encouragement.
Andy, it's been really a delight having you on the show, despite your James Bond impression, which was subpar.
Linoleum could use some work too.
Yeah, some work, but come on, you know, cut us some slack. You know,
you're very gracious, guys.
But we so enjoyed your company, and we loved your wisdom, and your book is very, very interesting. Thank you so much for being with us, and I hope you have a wonderful rest of the day.
Thank you. It's my pleasure. Thank you so much.
You bet. Andy Partington has been our guest. His book is called "Hope in Addiction: Understanding and Helping Those Caught in Its Grip." That's our show for the night and the day. Have a great rest of the week, and I will look forward to, as George and I always say, what do we always say, George?
Good morning, good night, and good afternoon. What do we always say? We're always talking.
Yeah, well, we'll say see you next week, Lord willing.
Lord willing, yeah. Yeah.
Thanks for listening. Programming like this is made available through your support. Information available at myfaithradio.com.